Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Overholt from the College of Charleston. Episode 4 of Classic Casts finds me speaking with Dr. Allison Sterrett-Kraus, an assistant professor in the Department of Classics. Sterrett-Kraus is a specialist in the archaeological study of ancient glass here at the College of Charleston, where she directs the Charleston Archaeological Glass Lab, a, quote, one-of-a-kind research opportunity for students, end of quote. She is currently leading a team of undergraduate volunteer researchers studying glass from the Bir El Nizia Church in Tunisia. This semester, they're meeting every Friday at 2:30 for 2 hours of music and uninterrupted archaeological pleasure. Welcome, Allison. So we're talking about the glass lab here at the College of Charleston. What is a glass lab?
Well, that's a good question. A glass lab is a unique animal. There's no other, as far as I know, in the United States on any college campus.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. This is the only place we can do this. So the glass lab is one version of an archaeological laboratory. We are very fortunate here at the College of Charleston to have archaeological glass that was excavated in the Mediterranean in the 1980s and 90s in a series of excavations, which were partnerships between American and Tunisian or Canadian and Tunisian projects or teams. And at that time in Tunisia, the patrimony laws were such that artifacts could be exported to the specialist. In more recent times, they've changed the laws, and now the specialists come to Tunisia and work on the artifacts there. But in the 80s and 90s, the material could be exported for study. It's never been completely studied, so it's never been returned to Tunisia. Thus, we have Roman glass here in Charleston on our college campus to allow us to study that material and prepare it for publication.
So explain what a typical glass lab experience would be like. So 2:30 on a Friday, students come in, what happens?
So one of the first things we do is put on the music. Because we are working on very small things which can be, which require a lot of meticulous care, but that can be kind of boring over long stretches of time. So we put on the music and we get out our materials. Our glass is stored in small plastic Ziploc bags, and it's stored according to the location where it was excavated on the particular site. So an excavation context is a single unit of human activity. And we are looking at the glass fragments that come from single units of human activity, and we're building up the story of what happened in all of these different units of activity in a particular site over a period of time. So the site that we're working on right now is a Byzantine period church from North Africa, so an early Christian church, and it had quite a lot of glass windows as well as mosaic floors, and it was clearly a quite wealthy church that was built sometime after 530 AD. And at some point it burned down and the windows melted. So when we have fragments of windows, they're not flat like modern window glass. They're all lumpy and bubbly because the glass melted in the heat of the fire.
What kind of skills do students learn in the glass lab?
The skills that they develop are broadly applicable to archaeology, but also to language and to any type of study or field that rewards careful attention to detail. So, for example, when you look at a fragmentary glass object and you examine whether it comes from a rim or a base, you have to be very observant about particular details, but you also have to synthesize a lot of information that you have from other sources. So it's kind of encapsulating exactly what we do in archaeology more generally, or in classics more generally, where we're reading ancient languages and thinking not just about the particular word, but where it fits in its context, we're doing the same thing with particular features of these fragmentary glass objects.
So what is the long-term project with this? I mean, I'm guessing, like, you know, from semester to semester, you're, you know, bringing students in, they're learning these skills, and you're kind of in it, but where do you foresee these projects going? Or are they going, are you making journal articles? Or can you talk more about that?
So the long-term goal with these projects is publication of this material. And I do what's called primary publication of archaeological material because I am a finds specialist, meaning I'm a team member of a project. And when we dig stuff up, I help identify exactly what it is. And that's what our job is here in the lab. So our goal with doing this identification is not just to identify the stuff, but to eventually tell people what it is that we have and what it contributes to our understanding of the site. What we are working on right now with this Byzantine church site is a publication of the material that will go into a multi-authored excavation report. So the excavation report will be called Birel Kinesia, Excavations of 1992 and 1993, and it will contain information about the stratigraphic history of the building as we understand it from the excavation. That is the layers and experiences of the building over time. And it will also include reports on the pottery, on the stone architectural features, on the mosaics, on the coins, on all of the different categories of finds that were excavated during the course of these excavations in the early 90s. And so our report, the glass report, will be one part of that. Glass is a really important part of excavation material from the late Roman and Byzantine periods because it was a very popular material. It was cheap, it was very accessible, and so it was used a lot, particularly in places where they wanted things to look nice but didn't have money for metal vessels that were more expensive, like silver or gold or bronze. So when we find lots of glass vessels, for example, in a church context, we can think about are they using these vessels in ritual practices at the church? Are they using them as lights? And if so, when are the lamps being lit? Are they only being lit during particular time periods? Are they being lit and left behind at grave sites within the church complex? So we can ask all of these questions once we know what we have.
As I said, students get to, I'm assuming that students are getting to see the kind of publication process too in this, yeah?
Yeah, so we are just moving into a new phase of the project. An unexpected challenge of this for me has been data management because this is a larger scale project than some that I have worked on before. And so the students are now learning how to take the data that they write on paper sheets and input that into a database. They are learning the skills of digital drawing so that we can make illustrations that will go into the publication. And they will be starting to help me with some of the interpretive parts of the project as well. That is thinking about groups of context or groups of human activity and what the glass in all of those different groups shows us together. So much like we go in language learning from learning how to read a sentence to learning how to read a paragraph to learning how to read a whole chapter to a whole book, now we've learned how to do single objects, we're learning how to do context, and soon we will be learning how to do whole stratigraphic sequence interpretation together.
Too often, the humanities are judged on their immediate usefulness. Can I get a job with this degree, right? Instead of the meaning and depth that they add to life. How has the Glass Lab enabled you to tap into that sense of wonder about what you get to do and what life is and what life was maybe for the Romans back then?
That's a really great question, and it's a great point. One of the things that I really love about Roman glass and Byzantine glass is that it's all made by hand. So it's all made by humans. It's not molded in a factory by machines, but it was made by humans. And the process of glass blowing, which a lot of us are familiar with, the process of glass blowing was developed in the early Roman Empire, and it actually hasn't changed all that much. The basic process is still the same. That is, a glass blower breathes through a tube into molten glass, expands the glass like a bubble, and then shapes the glass with simple tools before it cools. That process actually captures very specific human actions. It captures the specific human action of manipulating the glass with small hand tools, and it captures the action of breathing. So when we look at certain artifacts, we see in the glass something that we call blowing spirals. That is, marks, wavy sort of spiraling lines that travel across, for example, a vessel. And those preserve the breath of the Roman as it affected the glass. And so a really cool thing about holding Roman glass in your hand in this lab is that you can have that really sort of tactile experience of breathing and looking at an object and seeing where a Roman breathed at the same time. And that's really wonderful. And because we have access to this material, we can do that without getting on a plane and traveling to the Mediterranean. And we can have similar experiences other places in Charleston where we see the fingerprints of the enslaved workers who built the bricks that made the buildings, for example, in lots of the historic structures here. But this is, the lab is another place where we can really have that really visceral moment of connection with another human who lived many centuries ago.
Classic Cast is a production of the College of Charleston's Department of Classics.